Dear Plugged In. You in on this? Toyota's versatile SUVs roll up their sleeves and take on tough jobs, dress up for a night out, or haul your family and friends with their spacious interiors. And they're available with some real sweet tech. Want a hybrid SUV? Oh yeah, they got those too. All with a slew of standard features so you won't break the bank. Get the juice at Toyota.com, folks.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 88th episode of the fastest growing Denver Nuggets podcast, among those hosted by a person whose last name is a nocturnal bird. Welcome to the DNVR Nuggets' Serbian Corner. My name is Miroslav Čuk, and I'm counting 4 weeks until I'll land in the land of basketball that Colorado became at some point in 2020s. To help me do that, please hit the like button, tell your friends about the show, and share the episodes on social media of your choosing. Thanks in advance. This week of Nuggets basketball started in Dallas, Texas, and that's where the Mavs are playing their hearts out, trying to avoid the play-in. They successfully avoided it last year by being 11th in the Western Conference standings, but this time they want to avoid it by being better than a 7th seed. The Nuggets didn't fully grasp that, and they came into this game a bit casually. This resulted in 20-something offensive rebounds by the host team and a big 13-point lead late in the fourth. The Nuggets then stepped on the throttle, erased the deficit, and went three after Jamal's pull-up J, but that's all they could do. Luka hit a deep three to tie a game. Jamal pulled up again, this time from much closer range, but missed it. And then Kyrie Irving, who was playing his ass off all day, took the ball 2.8 seconds before the end and went with a full head of steam to his left, took an insane skyhook from 20 feet, and it was all net. The Mavs won a game the Nuggets didn't really deserve. Joker and Jamal combined for 13 from 36 from the field, and that usually doesn't cut it. 2 days later, the champs went to Minneapolis to wait for the home team that was playing on a back-to-back after visiting Salt Lake City. A really important game for the top of the Western Conference standings. Before the season started, I was making fun of Timberwolves for having so much money spent on Towns, Gobert, and Naz Reid, who were all different versions of a center. Well, none of the above played in this game, so naturally it was a weird game by the Nuggets. They got to a comfortable 15-point lead in the first half, mostly with Jokic on the court, but then in the third quarter got hit by a playoff kind of adjustment from Chris Finch. The Wolves decided to hard double Nikola and leave guys like CB, Payton, and Justin Holiday wide open. Jamal was also dribbling the air out of the ball and had some shaky possessions. In the fourth quarter, the Wolves used the non-Jokic minutes to go up, but then a 7-point avalanche from MPJ put the game back to the Nuggets' hands. In the end, the game became unnecessarily close thanks again to some wild three-pointers by the home team, and Ant Edwards even had the last-second shot to take the game to overtime. By the way, when Ant gets into the teeth of the defense, he is not using amazing footwork. He is plain and simple traveling a lot. The guy has wanderlust, I guess. 2 days later, the Knicks came to town, and as expected, it was a tough opponent, even with three front court guys missing. Isaiah Hartrock was there and had a great game, but we also got a top three all-time kind of game from Nikola Jokic, a 30-point triple-double performance that was actually more impressive than what the numbers suggest. A brilliant Michael Porter performance, and I felt he was able to do whatever he wanted on the court. And also great minutes from Jamal Murray, outside of that 4 minute stint at the start of fourth quarter that stank. It was a comfortable win against a good opponent. The only thing that worried me at the time was Jamal's ankle injury a minute before the end, and I believe that was the second time he rolled that ankle in the same game. 2 days later, last night, the Nuggets traveled to the hipster city of Portland, Oregon. Disclaimer, I've never been to Portland. The hipster designator is here because of the claim I've heard on one episode of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. I think I'll use the word designator a lot today. I like it a lot. So Jamal skipped this one, Joker 2. So both of them got 4 days of in Denver prior to a 5-game homestand. The Nuggets took this risk against the Duop Reed-led Blazers. Yeah, the tanking hosts rested their whole starting lineup. And it's a good thing they don't have a lot of all-stars, so they won't be fined by the league for it. Same goes for the Nuggets, by the way. Anyway, as expected, this game was a lot of Reggie Jackson, and he was good until the very end when he ran out of gas. Aaron Gordon was very physical, so was KCP, and Christian Brown kicked ass off the bench. The Nuggets had the 8-point lead 77 seconds before the end of the game, but still made it unnecessarily dramatic. But the win is what counts, and they are now 50-21 and need 8 wins in the last 11 to break the franchise record for single-season wins. It's still possible. Okay, that's about enough of me. Let's start the conversation. My first guest for today is my designated NBA guy. I had to put that NBA designator in there. I didn't want for you guys to think I was talking about the NFL guy draft. You know how high I am on American football. High enough to call it American football. Anyway, he is a contributor to Crown Hoops and somebody who always has great Nuggets takes ready to fire off. Calling from New Jersey, New York, it's Siti Fazio. Welcome back to the show, Siti.
Hey, Miroslav. Thank you for having me. Great to be here today.
So is March Madness your madness too?
Yes, very much so. March Madness has always been it's always been a great tournament for me. It's like one of the best sporting events that goes on during the year. So I've just been busy tuning in to all the games, getting all my draft prep in coming up for June. So always a great time just to even watch as a neutral observer, but more so just trying to scout all these prospects in preparation for the draft coming up.
Now that you mentioned that, I know it's pretty early for that, but my takes often come prematurely. So I'll ask you, who would be your favorite player the Nuggets could realistically draft this summer? And is it more based on a talent or fit on the team?
I think for me at this point, I'm more into fit. I think the Nuggets kind of have what they have. They have, they have their starting five, and then they have a couple of bench guys that they have, in the pipeline moving forward. So I think they definitely need a point guard. You know, just looking at Reggie Jackson, he's kind of getting up there in age, and you look at the bench, and Zeke Nagy's had an up and down year to say the least. DeAndre Jordan's just a little older now as well. So I just think either point guard or center is probably the main focus for them moving into June's draft. And we'll see. They have a first-round pick, and they have a second-rounder as well. So we'll see how they navigate moving forward.
Do you have a concrete name in mind, maybe?
I have a couple guys right now, but probably the favorite for me right now is Hunter Salas. He went to Wake Forest, still actually playing right now in the NIT. He didn't make the NCAA tournament. And funny enough, he actually was a teammate last year with Julian Strother at Gonzaga. Then he transferred out of Gonzaga because he didn't really play too much. Then went to Wake Forest. He had more of a lead role there as a lead guard. put up really great numbers this year. I think around 18 points, like 4 rebounds and 2 assists. So on really great efficiency as well. Really good defender at the point of attack. Versatile guard, where I think I'm not going to say he's a Bruce Brown type of replacement, but I think he has some of the same skill set where pretty good passer, not necessarily a point guard. But again, if you have Jokic on the floor and you have Murray, you don't really need a quote unquote point guard. You just need someone who could run a pick and roll and cut off a Jokic and Jamal and be a pretty good defender at the point of attack. So he's probably my favorite for now. I got a couple other guys as well, but he's probably my number one moving forward into June.
Yeah, that Marquette guy is also great, the point guard.
Tyler Kolek, that's your guy now.
Yeah. Well, I watched one game of his and now he's my guy. So it is what it is. Sorry, Buffs fans. I really like this guy. Okay, we have one more guest for today. He is probably the biggest superstar of Nuggets Twitter. He is a singer, a photographer, a videographer. So basically all the things I love to do if I could find some extra hours per day. He is originally from Trinidad and is really good at sports betting, which is a modern skill that is getting more valuable every day. So without further ado, welcome back to the show, Jeremy Nichols.
What's going on, guys?
Hey, Jeremy.
So Jeremy, you're not participating in March Madness, Harv?
Honestly, I have never really been into it as much as I would like to. All my friends talk about it. Everybody around me, they talk about it. And yes, don't get me wrong. I see the clips. I see, with that guy the other day who just absolutely destroyed, was it Kentucky, when he hit like 10 threes. I catch the highlights. I catch the things that are happening, but I'm not as invested in college ball as I would like to. It's something that over time I'm learning, but I'm more, once they get to the pros, I know everything about them. But prior to that, that's not my game. So I wait for the pros to talk, like CT and other guys who are in that space. Like I let them. That's your lane. I just sit back and just listen to you guys, because going back to even when I didn't know much about Christian Brown, even coming out of Kansas, right? And I was like, okay. I mean, okay. I saw a couple of highlights, and most people were just saying we don't really know too much. But you had some guys who were saying, listen, you don't know what this kid is. Now, Christian Brown is a player. I mean, look at last night, what his impact on that particular game. So, listen, man, those college kids are unbelievable. And for me, I just watch from afar. But when they get drafted, especially when they get on the Nuggets, I'll pay attention.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk a lot about Christian Brown today. He definitely earned that. But I have to ask you something completely, off topic. I don't know if I mentioned it before, but one of the most successful theater musicals in Belgrade in the 90s was called Trinidad and was written and performed by local artists in Belgrade. The main song from the musical was called I Want Mambo. So my question to you is Mambo one of the first things people think of when talking about Trinidad? Or was it completely random?
Honestly, no. I think it is completely random. I don't think that's when I hear that word, I don't really think Trinidad. So maybe I'm also uninformed, but I don't know. It doesn't really remind me of back home when I hear that word, honestly.
Okay. The second more serious quick question is about betting. Mm-hmm. We've found out that the NBA League Pass will integrate live betting into the app.
Right.
What are your thoughts on it? Do you maybe think the league should separate itself from betting on its games for the sake of integrity of the games, or am I just overthinking it?
I'll be honest with you. I'm, like you mentioned, I've been a sports bettor for quite some time. So it's something that I do on a daily basis. But I'll tell you guys this. I think, what's his name? JB Bickerstaff from Cleveland. He made mention of something the other day where you started to hear some like fans and stuff, death threats and different things like that towards families of players, coaches, people who are involved with the game, talking about, man, you lost me my parlay, or you sat this guy too early. He didn't get his 10 points. And like when it gets to that point where people's lives are being, affected by this, especially family, right? Once it gets to that point, then I think it's like, okay, we're doing too much. Because for me as a sports bettor, yeah, listen, you get frustrated if your bet doesn't hit, right? A player, you need 9 points from him. He has 8 points at halftime. And all of a sudden, the coach decides to sit him down. I'm looking at you, Jonas Valanciunas. But anyway, we have this happening right now, and I think it's fun when you know how to separate it, right? Just as a sports bettor, if you know how to separate the sports betting from reality, it's fine. But if you think that these coaches are supposed to do everything to win you your bet, come on, let's be realistic, people. Okay, these are also professionals who are playing a sport, and things don't always work out that way. So I think for the live side of things, I think it's fine, but it's the same rules that apply. It's like, if you're a sports bettor, you have to be responsible enough as a human being to understand that, listen, you put money on something, leave it there. That means you're willing to lose it, but don't threaten somebody because they didn't get 10 points for you to win you some money. Like, we're doing too much if we get to that point.
Yeah, I agree. City, do you have any extra thoughts on betting on the NBA app?
Yeah, I've just never been a sports bettor. I feel like once I started doing, I would start doing that, I just wouldn't stop. So I just haven't really like gotten into that kind of realm yet. I actually have a good friend who works like a pretty like well-known betting company, Jake Paul's betting company, I think it's called. And like, he works for them, so he like does all that stuff. So I see what he does. But for me, no, I've never gotten involved in that. But it seems like, you know, with the recent kind of developments, that seems to be a pretty slippery slope.
Yeah.
Okay, that will do for the first segment, and I promise to the fans watching that in the second segment we will actually talk about the Denver Nuggets basketball. So don't go anywhere. What a tease.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay, we are back. So the Nuggets are, at the very least, the second biggest favorite for the championship, according to almost everybody. They are, of course, not perfect. We have seen Timberwolves without three of their top guys really create a lot of problems, mostly for Jamal Murray, who they were trying to put pressure on throughout the game, since the champs don't really have many ball handlers next to him. If you try to help Jamal by playing Reggie Jackson next to him, those minutes were mostly a disaster this season. According to Fantasy Labs, in 200 minutes those two played together without Jokic, they've had a minus 13.3 net rating. Granted, Jamal's minutes without Jokic were horrible this season, with or without Reggie, almost minus 14 net rating. But I digress. Jokic-less minutes are less of an issue in playoffs, since there are fewer of those and include more starters than in regular season. So, CT, is there a solve for when a team is overloading on Jamal, trying to wear him down? And which teams scare you the most when we talk about this potential issue?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, because last year when Bruce Brown was on the team, the Nuggets could kind of run a Bruce Brown, Jamal Murray lineup, and you could have Murray play off the ball a little bit. You could have him run through screens, kind of like at Kentucky. He was a guy who played off the ball primarily. Then when he got to the NBA, he played a lot more on the ball, making more decisions, in that aspect. So I think this year's, that's kind of like the different kind of a question for the Nuggets as far as what happened last year. Is there a solve? I think the Nuggets are good enough to overcome that, I think. I think Aaron Gordon is a good guy. He could play off the ball a little bit where he can kind of set up the offense a bit, even though teams don't really respect his jump shot. I do think you kind of make him set up the offense in different areas of the court where that wouldn't really be a problem. Actually, for me, moving forward, I wanted Julian Strother to be that guy kind of being off the bench because he could kind of initiate a bit. So that's why I liked him in the draft last year. But obviously, he's been kind of up and down this year. So I just think Aaron Gordon is probably that fix a little bit. And then maybe having KCP or Michael Porter Jr. kind of operating a little bit more with the ball in their hands and not to necessarily create offense for themselves, but more so just to like set up the offense. And saw the other night, the Timberwolves left Mike open and he made them pay. So I think the other teams as well that you kind of asked about, maybe the Clippers, just because they have a lot of good perimeter defenders, would be an issue. But I don't know. It seems like they've been kind of been in a rut lately. Then the Wolves for sure. I think that's probably like the main team. Other than that, in the West, I don't really see that really being an issue. Because against the Celtics too, we saw the Nuggets didn't have that problem. You know, Murray was able to really set the offense well and play off of Jokic. So I just think it's the Timberwolves having like a lot of bigger players. You know, you have your McDaniels and your Cat and Rudy. That's like a really big front line to throw at Jamal. They have a lot of guys, you know, Nikhil Alexander-Walker as well. So I just think having those kind of bigger players probably presents a little bit more of a challenge for Jamal. And I just think the lineups moving forward have to have a lot more spacing. The other night we saw like there was just like a lot of bench lineups without like two or three starters, which I think will be something different we'll see in the playoffs.
So Jeremy, when we think about last year's playoffs, we always mention that Timberwolves series might have been the toughest
right.
of them all. And it's because they had the personnel to play against Jokic and they had personnel to play against Jamal. And especially if you think about it, Jamal didn't have the greatest of series. That was probably his least amazing series he had last year. And it's not a coincidence. First of all, it was in the beginning of playoffs and he kind of ramps up during the playoffs. But also, you know, Jaden McDaniels, who wasn't playing last year, is a great matchup for him. But they still had Nikhil Alexander-Walker, who did a great job on him. So do you expect a nuclear start to playoffs from Jamal that could, overcorrect on that kind of, or not overcorrect, but just compensate on that kind of effort from other teams against Jamal as the sole ball handler, primarily ball handler on the starting lineup?
Yeah, to answer your question, I do. I think everything is predicated on how the Nuggets go into the playoffs. Obviously, like you mentioned, it's only what you said, 11 games left or so until the end of the season. And we just need to make sure that Jamal is healthy going into that first series. Because let's be real, the first series is not going to be the Wolves, right? So at least we have that. So if you have Jamal with one good series under his belt prior to that second round or whatever that looks like in the Western Conference Finals, we don't know what that looks like just yet because one loss right now shifts everything, right? So I think what's really going to unlock Jamal Murray is Michael Porter Jr. Because I'll tell you this, if the Nuggets go into a series with the Wolves, and yes, you made some great points. Both of you guys made some great points about obviously McDaniels and those guys who were not there for last year's series. And I mean, even with like guys like Monte Morris coming off the bench, they have different guys to throw at Jamal. But one thing that I do know is this. He is starting to trust Michael Porter Jr. a lot more. Over this last, I want to say about maybe 2 weeks or so, you're visibly seeing it because it's something that I actually mentioned before. It always seemed like Jamal would always look for Jokic, which, I mean, listen, he's the best player in the world. You got to find him. But there were moments where you would see Michael Porter Jr. just standing in the corner with his hands wide open, basically saying, hey, listen, I know you guys are running a two-man game, but I'm here. But over the last couple of weeks, you're starting to see a trust in between with Jamal and Michael Porter. And I think that right there is going to unlock Jamal even more going into the playoffs, because now when they play this body up defense on him, all he's going to do is do exactly what Jokic does when people do it, find the open man, whether it's Michael Porter cutting, Aaron Gordon on the baseline. But I think he's going to use Michael Porter now more as a safety blanket when teams try to play that press defense, right? So I think that's what it's going to come down to. And then we know once somebody pisses off Jamal Murray, it's a different story, right? So I think once you get into the playoffs, the Wolves are a team that you could tell they're confident. That is one team that I think they believe that they could take the Nuggets out. And listen, they are a tough matchup. I'm not even without Cat, without Gobert, without Naz Reid the other night, I thought they played the Nuggets really well. So we just have to trust that Jamal Murray can do it. And based on what we've seen in the playoffs and his newfound trust in his sharpshooting teammate, I think that this playoffs, we're going to see Jamal Murray on another level. And I think he's going to average a double-double in these upcoming playoffs and still do his thing. But I think that's what's going to happen.
You made a great transition when you mentioned Michael Porter as a potential solve for problems with ball handling on the team. And I agree with you. Michael Porter, for me, today looks like one of the guys Nikola Jokic trusts with all his, you know, being. Like he trusts Jamal, like he trusts Aaron Gordon, like he trusts KCP, even though in a smaller role, of course. But now you can see Jokic hunting for open situations for Michael on the court. So that's really scary for the opposition, I have to say. But in this last stretch of games, all the way to the All-Star break, really, but Michael is averaging like 20 and 10 on great efficiency. What aspect of his game encourages you the most?
I think for me, it's his confidence, right? I mean, we're starting to see him believe that he's a part of the team now. Don't get me wrong. We saw flashes in the bubble, right? We saw flashes last season in the playoffs. Like, he has playoff moments. But I think now, because even going back to the bubble, you guys remember when he did the post-game interview and they asked him about just the two-man game that I just brought up. And he mentioned, hey, listen, we know that Jokic and Jamal are going to do the two-man thing, but we can help too, right? It was almost, he was basically implying that he could kind of contribute something. And over the years, we've seen him get into those modes, right? So now his confidence has grown, especially over the last couple of weeks, because everybody is looking for him now. He's getting wide open shots. Look at his efficiency. Look at the other night where he didn't miss a shot. Like he's in a different zone right now because he's seeing that his teammates are looking for him. And like I said, I truly believe that starts with him and Jamal Murray. Jokic will find everybody as long as they're open. I don't think anybody is going to dispute that. I just think that when Jamal has the ball and somehow the team is kind of hedging and moving around to stop that two-man game in some way, which is almost unstoppable, I think he knows that the ball is going to find him, especially in that corner, and he's going to knock down that shot. So I think it's going to be his confidence going into the playoffs. And let's be real. The way he's shooting the ball right now, listen, last night, a little different. Last night, he was the guy, right? Like, he wasn't like some guy on the corner. Like, he was supposed to be, everybody assumed that Michael Porter was going to go off last night because he was the focal point of the offense. But when Jokic is on the floor, Jamal is on the floor, and you have your, I mean, I guess we could debate on who really is the third option. Is it Aaron Gordon? Is it Michael Porter? It depends on the night. But Michael Porter is dangerous in his own right because not only is he hitting threes, he is cutting to the basket. His drive game has taken another step, and I think that in itself is going to make the biggest difference for this team.
So, City, when Nikola Jokic sets up the offense, half-court offense at least, the opposition usually has to guess if he wants to play with Jamal or if he wants to play with Aaron, you know, on the back line. But now when he is actually looking for Michael Porter as well, that sounds like a total conundrum for the other teams.
Definitely. No, it is for sure. And I think it's pretty funny looking back on it too. I think, I don't know if you listened to MPJ's post game the other day, he basically said that, Murray and Jokic obviously were the fulcrum of the team when he first came into the league. And then he said that he had to kind of adapt his game to, you know, how to fit around that. And he was always the guy. Like, if you go back to high school, he was the guy, number one player in the class, mm-hmm. going to be the number one pick. And then obviously the back injuries hit. But, you know, for Mike, he just had to be the one to fit in. And the problem, like, early on was Jokic and Murray. I don't think it's not they didn't trust him, but they just didn't. They kind of just saw him like taking these shots, and they were like, "Who's this guy coming in and taking these shots? We've been here and doing it." And you know, Mike just needed that experience. So I think now he's at a point where he's played a lot of games. You know, knock on wood, he's only missed one game this year, which has been great to see. So I think that experience playing with Jokic and just getting to know like where his shots are coming from. And he's moving off the ball a lot more now. I think that's something that I've been kind of paying attention to moving forward, where sometimes you just see him like in the corner, just like waiting for the ball. Now it's, he's cutting off the ball. You know, he's setting screens, slipping to the rim, you know, coming off of pin downs, and Jokic really looking for him in the handoffs as well. And then I think too, with Mike, is that he's actually figuring out how to pass the ball back to Jokic and then play off of him and, you know, backdoor cut after the fact, where sometimes you just give him the ball and then just stand there. But now he's like really trying to play a two-man game with Jokic and even too with Murray in the bench lineups too. Like, I just feel like he's really figured out, you know, kind of how to play between Murray and Jokic together, or if, you know, maybe Murray's off the floor and then he could play with Jokic, or if Jokic is off the floor, how's he going to play with Jamal? So I just think too, Adam Morris the other day, he put up a great point on his show. He said that, you know, MPJ is really, you know, figuring out his kind of like how to really be improved in his role. And for me, I think he's obviously, you know, a really high level starter, but like he's really figuring out how to play like with Jokic and Murray, and also to like operating by himself, like how to really figure out where he's getting his shots from, how to score efficiently, and obviously doing other things as well. But I just think the scoring has really been, like Jeremy said, like a confidence thing, but also too, like he's really figuring out like some more ways to really get involved with other than just standing, you know, standing around.
I don't know if how much minutes of his high school games have you had a chance to watch, but I don't want to take away too much from his basketball IQ development he obviously had in last several years. But I also kind of feel that Michael is on the top of his physical conditioning right now, comparing to all the seasons we've seen him on the Nuggets. So maybe his willingness to play off ball more is because his conditioning is just better, and so he's not, you know, made to save energy maybe in some portions of game. Or is it, I don't know, I'm just trying to figure out, did he just make a leap in front of our eyes, or was it in the making in both like IQ and conditioning phase of his games simultaneously? What do you think, Jeremy?
Yeah, I mean, actually, that's a great point, because it's actually something that I have not even really thought about, because, you know, like CT mentioned, I mean, Michael Porter has played more games than Jokic this year, which is ridiculous to think about, right? But yes, I mean, good health does bring on confidence, because now you trust yourself when you move around the screens. You trust yourself when you cut to the basket. And I think, you know, like CT mentioned, his passing ability is starting to show, because I'll tell you this, we're going back to the betting side of things, right? Michael Porter's passing or his assist props have never been a thing. They don't even allow it, because it's like all people are going to do is bet the under and you'll always win. But now, last night, it popped up last night. It did say two, but it's a start, right? And it's something that us as Nuggets fans, we watch Michael Porter and we understand that we know how deadly he is offensively. But like you said, if he decides to move the ball and do like a give and go type of situation, it is absolutely deadly. So this is something that, just like you said, it's a development for him personally as a player. Yes, his health does play a huge role into this, because now, like I said, he believes in himself now, and he knows that if he moves around, he can make certain things done. He's not worried about, oh man, if I cut to the basket, my back could flare up. Or I don't think he's thinking about these things anymore, because of right now, look at his season currently. So if he continues to pass the ball the way that he's been doing, now he opens up another level to the defense, having to figure out like, wait, is he going to pass? Is he going to shoot the three? But then again, even if you have to decide that he's 6'10" and he's going to shoot over you, and his contested shots, I saw something the other day where they showed like all of the contested shots that certain players have taken. And he is like, in terms of how many he's taken, it's almost like 100 over the second place guy. And he's still shooting at like a very, very high clip. So he brings something to this team that nobody else can bring, right? And I think as long as he continues to really hone his personal skills, this team will continue to be unstoppable. And he is actually, I think he's actually going to be the reason that the Nuggets win this ring game. Not saying he's going to win the MVP or anything, but I think that his development is going to, because you know how teams, like you said, when you win a championship, you're not the hunter anymore. You're the hunted. So now teams are looking to stop the Nuggets. And in their mind, they're thinking, okay, how do we stop this two-man game? That's their process, because they know the last 5 minutes of a game, the Celtics know, right? They understand that it's very hard to stop regardless of who you have on your roster. But if Michael Porter knows how he can adjust his game to move around that, like he's been doing as of late, good luck. Good luck.
Yeah, I really like your point about his passing, and people might think I'm joking when I say that he improved his assist numbers by 50% from one assist per game to 1.5 assists per game. But it's not a joke, because his role didn't change.
Right.
He's still playing the same game, and you know the results just show a significant increase in assists. But City, when I watch Michael now, I feel so much more confident in his shot. Even though he was shooting pretty well, he was like at 39% from the three for the whole season. It's not like he was shooting badly. But now I kind of feel like when he gets a semi-open shot, like those are just wet now. Yeah. What's changed? Is there anything that changed?
Yeah, I actually think it's the experience. I think he's actually leveraging. I think he has made improvements to his game. I think at Media Day, he did say that this was the first summer that he had that he wasn't rehabbing, which I think was a really important, you know, aspect of his development. Because, you know, years past, he's been, like he said, he was even last year going into the championship run, he said he was rehabbing and, you know, trying to develop his game at the same time simultaneously. So I think this year he's leveraged his game a bit more. He's added a bit more to it. I think he's been able to put the ball on the deck a lot more as well. And I think that kind of has to do with his health, because in the years past, maybe he would shy away from contact or, you know, would kind of be wary about, you know, the back, obviously. But I think this year, like, you can just tell, like, he's really taking the ball to the rim aggressively. He's dunking on people now. That post the other day on Lively was crazy. That was a really nice dunk that he had. And I just think, like Miroslav said, I think playing with Jokic these, you know, past couple of years, he's kind of raised his IQ level. And I think Gordon said that as well after the Warriors series where they lost, where he's like, I had to kind of raise my IQ level and raise my awareness of how to play with Jokic and, you know, how to leverage that. So, and I think too with Jokic is that you need, in order for Jokic to display his brilliance, right, you need offensive options around him that are going to make him, you know, show off his best attributes. And I think MPJ is like, and Jamal, of course, and Gordon too, that's why this team's so perfectly constructed, is that you need a guy like MPJ, where he's a 6'10 shooter, cutter, you know, rebounder, lob threat as well. So you just need a guy like that to really showcase and make, you know, Jokic look, you know, as good as he is. So I just think that's kind of part of it, is that Mike is, you know, a great compliment to Jokic and really an elite fit, you know, with this Nuggets team.
Yeah, if Michael displays a similar kind of games in playoffs like he's doing now, I'm not sure they're gonna go 16-4, guys. Like they might be better than that. I mean, I know I'm flying too high probably, but we'll see.
Project Dynasty.
I'm pretty optimistic at the moment, to say the least. Okay, let's take one more short break, and then we'll go to the most exciting guys to talk about, and that's the young twins, CB and P-Watt. Don't go anywhere.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, so City, you've been very vocal about trusting Christian Brown the most of all the guys off the bench for this year's playoffs. Do you expect him to have the same role he had last year in the playoffs, or do you maybe expect more of him?
I expect more of him in a way that I don't think he's going to change his role that much. I just think he's going to have more minutes than last year, because you saw, you know, in that Timberwolves series, he played a pretty decent role. And then the Suns series, I thought he was pretty good as well, you know, against KD and guarding Booker and some of those guys. And then the Lakers series obviously didn't go too well. Then the finals, he redeemed himself, like 15 points on the road in the finals game for a rookie. Mm-hmm. That's unheard of, especially for a guy who was the 21st pick in the draft. Yeah, for me with Brown, I just, even going back to college, I've scouted him for a couple of years prior to that and seen him in person, you know, play even before that as well. So I just kind of had a feel on his game. I just thought he'd be a great fit for what Denver needed, especially off the bench, as far as a good defender, really, really good athlete. The shooting's obviously hit or miss, but, and, you know, and just to make it simple, he's a dog, you know what I mean? So that's also cool, you know, to see. But yeah, I think with Brown, I just think he's the most steady guy. Just him playing last year, getting that finals experience, like Malone said last night. And not from a skill set perspective, but I do think he has shown a bit more ability to put the ball on the floor this year and make some plays for himself offensively. I don't think you really want that, you know, all the time, but I do think it's good that he kind of has that in his bag to go to here and there. And then obviously I think the defense has been really good, especially after the All-Star break. You know, he's been really great on that end of the floor as well. So I think moving into the playoffs, he's going to be probably like 1A and 1B with Reggie. I just think Reggie, obviously, you just need his skill set as far as like another ball handler, like we kind of mentioned before. You just need another setup guy to play, you know, with Murray or with, you know, when Murray sits on the bench. So, but yeah, I'm really optimistic with CB, and I think he's been really great, especially after the All-Star break. He's been playing really well.
Jeremy, Christian had an amazing game last night.
He did.
What the hell was that?
You know, listen, he's one of those players where, yes, prior to the All-Star break, maybe a little underwhelming, right? I mean, we saw a lot of games where he would just come out and, you know, I think, was it Russell Westbrook or Pat Bev who said it? He was doing cardio, right? Just kind of running around. And you saw the effort in certain places, but it wasn't like the focus wasn't there, right? But what we're seeing now, and maybe that text message from Nikola Jokic, which I would love to see, by the way, it has changed the mindset of a lot of people, and you could see it in their faces. Like, you can literally see it. Like, even Christian last night, you know, after he got like this and one play, and then he came back down and the camera went to his face. And like, right now it's just a certain level of focus that you're seeing from these players. But CB in particular, what I'm liking now, when he attempts a three pointer, I'm actually thinking it's going in now, right? Before, it was kind of like that cringy feeling, like, I don't know if that may not be a good shot. But now, especially if he's wide open, like if he's wide open, I have all the confidence in the world in his shot now. I think maybe Chris Marlowe mentioned it on the broadcast last night, where I think he said that he's maybe shooting like he's up to like 39% after the All-Star break from like threes. And that's really good for a player who, you know, like I said, you looked in the past and you're kind of wondering, when he takes a three, is it a good shot? I don't know, right? But we're starting to see what he can do. We know he's a guard. He can get rebounds, right? He's definitely one of the better rebounding guards that I've seen, especially coming off the bench. He's moving the ball a lot more now. But we know when he cuts to the basket, especially when he knows, like, he can attack, the kid is really good. Just like you mentioned, CT, going back to the finals last year, and you saw that moment where he had that 15-point game. And listen, man, every time I see Christian Brown just go crazy in a game, like, I'm just rooting for him, because, like I said, I didn't know much about him prior to him being drafted last season. But now it's like, I don't want him on another team. You know, you see certain things. And I know, obviously, losing Bruce Brown last season, everybody looked at him, looked at P-Watt, and you're thinking, what's their role going to be like? Is it just going to be more minutes? What are they going to do now? But I think if we see what he's giving us, like after the All-Star break going into the playoffs, it's, oh man, Christian Brown brings something else to that second unit that I think you need. And it's hustle. And that's something you cannot teach.
Yeah. And Michael Malone had this press conference when he talked about the playoff rotation, and he of course said that Christian Brown had a great game, and this is why, I mean, that's not the sole reason why he's one of the guys he trusts in off the bench,
right,
to play on playoffs next to Reggie Jackson, which makes sense. Reggie is the only point NBA level point guard that's on a full contract right now on the Nuggets. And then he didn't mention P-Watt. Like, he did it on purpose to light a fire under P-Watt. I'm pretty sure of that.
Right.
But Peyton Watson has shown a lot more this season than I honestly expected. I'm not flying too high with him, but he should definitely be one of the guys who will play a lot of minutes in these upcoming playoffs, of course, if I'm not mistaken. Should we be worried about situation when teams decide to sag off him and CB and Justin Holiday on the 3-point line to jam up stuff inside the paint? And are there any teams that could exploit this lack of spacing regardless of the defensive versatility of these lineups? What do you think, CT?
I think the most important thing with those lineups is that they really separate those guys together. I don't think Brown and Payton could play really a lot together in the playoffs. I do think it depends on the lineup. I think if you play him with Murray, like a KCP, MPJ, or an Aaron Gordon, I think then you could slot Brown and Watson in there. I think that would be kind of beneficial because you have, two dead-eye shooters, and KCP as well, if he's in there too. And then obviously playing Watson next to Jokic when Gordon's on the floor, I think that could work as well. I think Brown could play, like I said, in front of KCP if he's, on the bench. But, yeah, it's definitely something to monitor because you saw in that Timberwolves game the other night, Holiday, Brown, and Watson, like Murray, had like four players on him, like, and he was trying to pass the ball to them, and just they weren't even guarding them. So I do think I think Malone could see it too as well, just in the playoffs moving forward. He's gonna have to separate those guys. And I think that quote from Malone last night was just a clear motivational quote to Watson. I didn't think it was like a signal of like, I think we've known how Malone operates for like however many years he's been coaching for Denver now, that we kind of know that that's his motivational kind of quote in the presser post game. So I think it was more of a motivational quote than anything. But post All-Star, I think Watson's shooting like 20-something% from three, so it hasn't been as great than the beginning of the year. But I just think he's way too important to what the Nuggets do on the bench as far as a defender, someone who's a cutter, really good athlete as well. So I'd be shocked if he didn't get minutes in the playoffs, and I think he'll bounce back.
I think Chris Marlowe mentioned last night on the broadcast that he was shooting 3 of 23 from the 3-point line in March,
right?
Which is pretty damning. So, Jeremy, you seem really confident in P-Watt being a part of playoff rotation, right?
I do. I mean, let's be real. We've all mentioned it here. Michael Malone is doing the whole Zen thing, right? He's trying to get in your mind. He's trying to make them, get to that next level, but it is interesting with P-Watt, right? P-Watt is the only player that I think has shot worse since the All-Star break. But it's kind of interesting. I think when the commercials came out with him and Jokic, which is kind of funny, when that came out and you realize like, man, this is incredible, that's when he shot really well. Like, it was like the timing of it. I don't know if it was just a confidence with him where, having that time with Jokic and whatnot. But immediately after those commercials came out, Peyton Watson, I think it was like a 3 or 4 game stretch where every time he shot the ball from three, it was almost automatic, right? And then after that, it just kind of went back down. I don't know what happened. But there was a moment where he was really good from three, and then that changed. So that is something that needs to be monitored. But other than that, I mean, let's be real. Defensively, he brings something that's going to be very valuable for this team, regardless of who they play in the playoffs, because at the end of the day, you're going to run into teams that have a guy on the wing who can hit the three, whether that's a Kevin Durant or who Peyton Watson plays relatively well. Of course, that last game against the Suns where Kevin Durant went off and he had that good overtime and things like that, those things happen. KD is, one of those types of players, so you can't really stop him. But Peyton Watson is going to be one of those players that he brings something to. He's a lengthy guy who, I mean, look at the other day where he just went to the basket with reckless abandon. He's one of those players who can get in the air, get those block shots, which he has some of the most incredible highlights of blocks that the Nuggets have seen. He is an incredible shot blocker. So I think what he's lacking right now with his accuracy from three or even with his mid-range shot, that could be fixed. I'm not worried about that. I think more so as long as he stays focused on the defensive end, he's going to continue getting minutes because the playoffs is all about that. A lot more in the playoffs. It's not as much as like your fast break points. They play a lot of half court offense in the playoffs, and you need a player who can lock down the team or at least help stop the team's best offensive player in the playoffs. And P-Watt is one of those guys. So it's going to be, he's going to have those tough games. Yeah, that comment just popped up saying sophomore slump. Like that's a real thing. Like players have those moments, but I'll tell you guys this. Once the playoffs get going, I have all the trust in the world in CB. I have all the trust in the world in P-Watt because I think they'll know, don't do more than you're asked to do. Stay in your lane. Do what got you there. You're a champion, mind you, right? Get back into that champion mindset and you're going to be all right. So I trust him and I think he's going to be all good.
Yeah, we have this comment from Rob Canum saying that text message must be like receiving the word of God. And I have to say something here. We usually say that Nikola Jokic is our Lord and Savior. But really, Nikola is so here. Like, he's always here. And Jamal Murray is kind of like a God figure because you don't really get proof of his existence during the regular season. And then when playoffs come around, he's appearing there and showing all of his might. So we might need to rephrase some stuff we are talking during the years. Okay, let's take one last short break and then we'll get a bit philosophical. How about that for a tease?
Sounds good.
Don't go anywhere.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Okay. Philosophy time. What is the biggest strength the Nuggets will show in the playoffs? And please don't say Nikola Jokic. I'm interested in team concepts here. Let's start with CT.
I just think it's experience, you know, championship experience. Mm-hmm. I think obviously the starting lineup too. I mean, I think the starting lineup actually is better than last year. If you look at the numbers as well, I think that kind of bears out too when we look at the net rating. But I just think MPJ is a better player than last year. I think on both ends of the floor, I think offensively he's a more confident player. I wouldn't say he's taking like a leap per se, but I think that he's like in his role. And what he does, I think he's sharpened what he's good at, and he's been even better. So I think that kind of adds another layer to what Denver is. So I would say the starting lineup in total. I just think even Murray, I think he's better than last year as well. If you look at the regular season numbers, and obviously he missed a good chunk of the year. He missed about like 16 games so far, which is, you know, a pretty big number. I'm actually pretty surprised, considering that the Nuggets are almost at their almost franchise record coming up. If he played more games, the Nuggets could have had like a 60-win season.
Yeah.
So even I think Murray, Porter Jr., and then Jokic too, I think he's better than last year as well. I just think he kind of has more in his bag. I just think he's just more unstoppable than he's ever been. So I think the starting lineup and the bench is obviously still a question, but you know, when you have as good of a starting lineup as you do, and the playoffs are about, you know, 5 to 8 minutes for the bench guys. So I don't really think it's going to be that big of a problem.
What about you, Jeremy?
I'm actually going to piggyback on what CT is saying, because I do think experience brings a certain level of confidence now that the team knows what to do when things get tough. One of the comments just popped up, that belief when you get behind. Look at the Nuggets over the past, 3 weeks or so, right? How many games were the Nuggets down by double digits in? And as Nuggets fans, and I'll tell you this, I would tweet about it in that moment and say, Nuggets fans, the Nuggets are down by however much. Do you still believe the Nuggets can win this game? 95 to 98% are saying, yeah. Like, no one was worried about it. Even going back to the Warriors game a while back, and, you know, the Nuggets were down by, what, 18, I believe, in the at the end of the third or really late in the third. And you're seeing this team, and I'm sitting there thinking, I'm not worried. I'm not worried. Even though they're down by double digits, I'm not worried. And just like that, the Nuggets came rallying back. Jokic hit that ridiculous shot to win the game. But that was then. And there were a bunch of games since then that the Nuggets were down double digits. So I think there is a belief in the team now, individually as players. I think even if they go down, and of course you're going back to the bubble, they know how to come back from bad situations. But now it's so consistent, it's ridiculous. Because now you're not even worried when they go down in a game. So I think that belief in their self, I mean, this does come with confidence. They know they're champions. We don't have to tell them that. They know, they all look at their rings and they know they've seen the trophy. They know what that feels like. And they know the mentality that they have to be in to get to that point. And we talk about this switch, right? We talk about this switch that the champions have where, all right, we can lock in and get to where we need to go. Jokic, Murray, AG, Porter, KCP, all these guys in your starting lineup especially, they know that when the chips are down, they know that they have plays that they can go to offensively and defensively that can cause havoc for the other team. And it's a consistent thing now because you see it. Even in the Dallas game, they were having a little rough patch there. And right at the end, yes, I know Kyrie hit this ridiculous shot that we probably will never see again, but you saw the Nuggets decide, okay, let's play now. And they brought it all the way back with no issue. And that is the thing with this team. They know that they can do it. Now, me as a fan, I would love to be in a situation where they wouldn't have to do that, right? Because at the end of the day, you know, they're causing us some stress. But I think the fact that they know that they can do it, especially going into the playoffs, because there will be no playing down to the competition once the playoffs start. Because look at all the teams that, let's just say whoever they line up with, all the teams that are in the play-in, they all have guys who are legendary players. And at any given moment, those players can change the tide of a series, right? So you have to be ready. So I think now you're not going to be playing the Pistons or the Wizards where you got to worry about, are the Nuggets going to take them seriously? No, they're going to take everybody seriously. And that is what's going to create a dangerous team because they know what they got to do now. 16-4, like you said, they could beat it, but they got to be ready for it.
Yeah, and the way they could beat 16-4, however crazy that sounds, is most of the teams have the same number of basic actions they use, even in playoffs.
Right.
But the Nuggets kind of have more solves for every of those actions. Like, if Giannis, we do this, yeah, mm-hmm, and they do that, we will go here, and now we have Aaron Gordon in the dunker spot, or we have KCP in the corner. And even when KCP gets the ball in the corner, he's still not 100% shooting that. He might find, you know, Michael Porter 45 degrees from him. It's just the team really feels like a real organism right now, with everybody integrated completely. So yeah, I feel that's really the main strength of this team. And boy, I'm a greedy son of a bitch. I have to say something. It's because regular season is so long, and you know, it makes me angry when I know the team can play even better in regular season,
right?
And yeah, they're still like struggling to get to the best, you know, record in franchise history, even though we know this is by far the best team the Nuggets have ever had. It's just that either they don't care enough to do it, or, as I mentioned before, we have this problem with non-Jokic minutes when they're like minus 11 without him on the court, and you know you have Jamal Murray who could make those, you know, minutes at least like a zero. And that would bring the Nuggets easily to like 65 wins. This is what I feel. I might be wrong on that. It might be too much of a mental exercise to do that. But yeah, it's just, yeah. I guess I'll have to live by the Nuggets only dominating the playoffs. It's like, it sucks. The life really sucks. What you gonna do? Okay, One last question for both of you. Is there a five-man lineup that we haven't seen a lot so far this season that you'd be hyped about seeing before the end of the season? So still in the regular season, not like something you guarantee that will work in playoffs, something crazy. So CT, do you have a lineup we haven't really seen that might be exciting?
Yeah, I think with Jokic, we've seen like basically every kind of configuration that the roster has because of Murray being out and not running a point guard at different times has been kind of crazy. But I think for me, I think the bench lineup I'd like to see mainly is Murray, Murray, Brown, MPJ, Watson, Gordon. That's my favorite five-man bench lineup just because – was that yours too, Miroslav?
Exactly the same.
We got the same thinking there.
Exactly the same. Yeah, they played only for 3 minutes together this season with a +33 net rating.
I know
that would change on a bigger scale, but man, would that lineup be fun?
Yeah, just think with that lineup. I think Malone's actually has that in his back pocket. He doesn't want to really deploy it yet and put it out there. I just think with that lineup, you have three great defenders in Brown, Watson, and AG, and then Murray and MPJ can be your shot makers. And then Gordon obviously is a good rim roller as well. So I just think that lineup has really, really great configuration as far as like what Denver needs in the bench minutes. They just need to lock in on defense and have just enough offense for Jokic to come back and then like kind of give that final punch. So I just think that's kind of like my favorite five-man unit because they're really tall as well. Like Murray's the smallest guy, 6'5", and they're really athletic and versatile. So that's probably my favorite lineup to see moving forward. And I'm sure in the playoffs, we're going to see that a lot. Don't be surprised if Malone takes that out in game one.
Yeah, that would be awesome. What about you, Jeremy? Do you have a lineup in mind?
Yeah, I'll tell you guys. So that lineup is deadly, right? Especially defensively. I mean, there's good luck, right? Good luck to whoever is trying to score on that team. But I'll tell you, there was a moment like earlier in the season where I think Aaron Gordon had missed a game or two and they moved Michael Porter to the four, right? And then you brought in Justin Holiday. What I'll tell you about that lineup, man, the potential of threes made in that lineup, because I mean, Justin Holiday is one of those 3-and-D type of guys, but when he gets hot, he gets hot. And Michael Porter at the four, I mean, you saw him blocking shots more. You saw him, cutting to the basket even more. But of course, he's been rebounding like crazy as of late. But I think it opens up and it spaces the floor so much more with that, because I love Aaron Gordon. But of course, there are some moments where you can sag off from Aaron Gordon, especially when he decides he wants to shoot transition threes for some reason. But I think that lineup to me, and we didn't get to see it much, but I did like the Jamal, KCP, and then you had Justin Holiday at the three, Michael Porter at the four, and then Jokic at the five. I just thought that because you couldn't sag off on anybody in that lineup, it opened up the floor so much, and Jamal Murray was able to operate. Jokic was able to do his thing because they're essentially playing a five out. And I thought it was really cool just to watch, but I think Aaron Gordon brings something so valuable to this team. I mean, that whole connection between him and Jokic, when Aaron Gordon is in a dunker spot, because even that one game, I believe it was against Boston, when Jokic just threw it up in the air. It was like, is it a layup? Is it a alley-oop? Like, this Aaron Gordon provides something to this team that you cannot take him out of the lineup, really. But in a situation where you have to, I thought that would have been a nice go-to, because it still allows you to have Reggie off the bench, CB off the bench. Those guys can still come in and back you up. But I did like Michael Porter at the four, and I thought a lot of people agreed when we saw that game because we were talking about it live, and a lot of people really liked seeing Michael Porter at the four in certain lineups. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier that that was my last question, and that was a blatant lie because I actually have a very important question for you for the end. The Nuggets now have a five-game homestand in front of them. First Grizzlies, then Suns, Timberwolves, Cavs, Cavs and Spurs. So what would be the expected number of wins for you? What would make you happy, and what would be a disappointment?
I mean, I expect at least four wins personally. I just hope that the one loss does not come against the Cavs because I'm going to be at that game, right? And I had this whole thing where like when I would go to games, the team would win. And then that came to an end horribly against the Houston Rockets last year. That was the game where I went and I had, you know, it was such a great experience that night. And then they got clobbered by the Rockets. So for me, in this five-game streak right here, I do believe the Nuggets win at least four. I don't know what team they're going to lose to. I mean, I hope it's not the Suns again, because they're going to bring confidence to that team, especially after the Suns fans had this whole thing last time. And, you know, Suns fans, man, they're next level. I'm not even going to bash them today. But the second they – I love it, Daniel. I see 5-0. But I do think they'll let one slip, but it'll only be because they're just kind of like – there's going to be because of their doing, not so much the other team. It's just going to be something that happens. But I think 4-1 is kind of where you want to be at least. Anything less than that, I will be very disappointed.
What about you, CT?
I'm hoping optimistically for 5-0. Yeah, you know, that'd be the best part about it. I think the game you have to win is the Timberwolves game.
Yeah.
Because then I think Denver basically – I have to look at the numbers, but I think they would be like pretty solidly ahead of the Timberwolves moving forward as far as a tiebreaker goes. So
yeah.
I think that's like the main game they have to win. And then the Suns game too, that KD shot that he hit last time just made me mad when he hit that. So yeah. I hope the Nuggets kind of bounce back and win that game as well. But we'll see if Murray comes back, because I don't know. Malone said the other night that maybe about his ankle, so I don't know if he'll be available. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see like a couple starters get rested here and there. I think MPJ's logged a lot of minutes lately, and AG's been like an Iron Man as well for the most part, and KCP too. So wouldn't be surprised if like you see like Murray and Jokic come back and you have like an MPJ like or Gordon like benching one night just to get some rest.
Yeah, I agree. Four wins would be on par, I guess. And that would mean 54-22. So they would need to win only four of the last five. No, first. I don't know. It's just they would be closer to beating that franchise record for wins in a season. I'm really high on that. I really wish for that to happen for this generation of Nuggets. It's one of the side quests I would like to have. Filled out. Anything you want to promote, gentlemen, before we go?
Honestly, not really. I just love talking Nuggets, man. So anytime you want me back on the show, man, I will be here. So that's it. I got nothing else to promote right now. That's it.
CT, what should be looking out from you?
I just got some draft stuff in the works coming up soon. You know, the draft coming up in June, so usually post some clips online, or I got some articles coming out more toward June. Some of it's Nugget-centric, but some of it's more just general. So hopefully you guys tune in for that. So be on the lookout for that coming up. And Miroslav, thanks for having me on. Jeremy, great meeting you as well.
Yes, sir.
It's great. Absolutely. Yep, great being on with you guys as always. So you know, hopefully we can talk again soon.
Thank you guys very much. That's all we got for today. We are almost there, just 11 more games until we get to see a bunch of Team USA members play in the play-in. And after that, the playoffs are coming, and I am too. So until next weekend, Troy Daniels.